Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. On this segment of the program, we're doing our regular landlord-tenant laws and issues program, which we try to do about every 6 weeks or so. My guests are actually my stars. They're really outstanding. They're very, very knowledgeable people. If you've listened to this program over the years, you'll remember the names of these people, I hope. James Coy Driscoll, an attorney who represents tenants, and he has law offices in San Francisco. My other guest is Mark Seidenfeld, a real estate attorney who represents landlords and tenants. Obviously not in the same case. We hope.
That would be bad.
And he has offices in South San Francisco. Funding for Your Legal Rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the San Mateo County Bar Association, the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar of California, and the Family Law Section of the State Bar. And I welcome both of you back to the program. Nice to have you here.
Thank you.
Nice to be here, Chuck.
And Coy, I know you've been struggling with a virus. Can you hear us okay?
I can.
This is good. We hear you fine.
Good.
You know, earlier on this station, on KLW, they did a program on the Cross Currents program, which is on at 5 p.m., focusing on the Ellis Act and talking with various people who had received evictions. They had been in their apartments in San Francisco for, some 30 or some 40 years, and we're receiving evictions and talking about that. The Ellis Act, of course, is a statewide law, is it not?
Yes, it is.
Could you both talk a little bit about the Ellis Act in terms of what happens, why it happens, and what are the sanctions or what are the tenants who are given an eviction notice entitled to? And then we'll go and take some calls from the listeners.
Mark, you want to start that?
Sure. The Ellis Act was passed by the legislature in response to various local rent control ordinances around the state, particularly Santa Monica and Berkeley. They were making it very difficult, if not impossible, for landlords to go out of business, to sell their properties, to withdraw units from use as housing, as rental housing. So the legislature passed this law basically saying that you can, under certain conditions, stop being a landlord. It has blossomed over the years. It's been used a lot by landlords in San Francisco, for instance, as a way of getting tenants out so they can sell the building. It's pretty obvious that selling empty units is much more profitable for a landlord than selling units occupied by tenants who are protected by the rent control ordinance. So,
yeah, and I would add to that. One of the restrictions in the Ellis Act is for a number of years, the building cannot be used for residential housing.
Yes.
Rental housing, I should say. But what happens is, let's say you have a three-unit building and you Ellis Act and get everybody out, and then they've been turning them into TICs.
Yes.
Now, wait a minute. You've got to don't abbreviate so much. TIC, tenants in common. What does that mean?
Common. You have three separate units where you have, say, three separate families, unrelated families, owning the entire building, but there's an agreement amongst them that family A is in unit one and family B is in unit two, etc.
It's like owning a condominium, but it's a tenants in common is where you own together, the three families own the common walkways, do they?
No? They own the entire building together.
Oh, they own the entire building.
But they own the entire building.
I see.
But they have an agreement that you get to occupy unit one, I get to occupy unit two.
I see.
Coy gets to occupy unit three.
Okay.
It's a way of getting into the ownership of property in San Francisco much more affordable than buying a single family.
One of the comments that was being made by more than one of the persons interviewed on the earlier program, Cross Currents, was that people, the sanctions of Ellis Act can't help people.
Is
I don't know what's happening.
I'm sneezing like crazy.
You're talking to us, Chuck.
Boy, that must be it. Is that the sanctions available to tenants are really in San Francisco kind of meaningless because of the incredible rental expense.
The problem with that is there's an unspoken assumption in San Francisco that private landlords are somehow responsible for providing below-market housing for tenants, and that's simply not the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm going to, of course, disagree with Mark, especially when it comes to philosophy of rental housing. The rent ordinance was enacted, has been amended, to preserve affordable housing. And as for a number of reasons, the Google boom, et cetera, there's been more demand for housing. The landlords are trying to force people out, do away with affordable housing. Let's say a family's renting a place for $1,500, has been doing, you know, they've been there 15 years, and now the market rate for the place is $4,500. Well, the landlord will do most anything to get those people out so he can get more money. And, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, we live in a society that doesn't allow unregulated use of our property. That's why I can't drive on the sidewalk.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
I would respond that this is a perfect example of the fact that you cannot repeal the laws of economics. People have been trying for hundreds of years, if not thousands of years. San Francisco is not going to succeed either.
So what are the sanctions? What can a tenant expect if the landlord legitimately is stopping the business of renting the units and is going to turn around and sell the units either as a tenancy in common or whatever it may be? What is the sanction? What are tenants entitled to get?
Well, the rent ordinance says they're entitled to get, it's a figure that increases every year based on a statutory formula. Right now it's about a little over $5,000, and if there's an elder or disabled person, they can also get another $3,000. And by the way, for all those tenants out there listening, if you, like I, wear eyeglasses, congratulations, you're disabled if you look at the definition.
Are you serious?
He's not serious, no.
I'm absolutely serious. I've gotten the money.
How much? How much can you get if you have a disability?
You get the extra $3,000.
Oh, I see. All right. But okay, I got you. I got you. So the maximum that a tenant could get who may have a disability or who may be over a certain age is $8,000. Is that right?
But there's also a maximum per unit. Because normally, there might be several people living in a unit.
Ah.
So there is a maximum.
Okay. All right.
But that maximum doesn't apply to the disability. So if you had 15 people in the unit, and I'm not suggesting there are, but let's just say that, yeah, the base, the $5,000 would be capped at around, it's usually about three times that amount.
Wow.
I think it's 13 or 14,000 is the max they give.
Is it? Okay.
For the disabled, if you have 15 disabled people, it's 15 disabled payments.
15 disabled times the 3,000, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, that is something. Now, the comment was, and I'd like you both to really comment about this if you would. And, of course, this relates to what's going on in San Francisco, which I think now has the reputation for being the most expensive rental area in the country.
That's true.
Is that true? Okay. Yeah. So although the law, Ellis Act, applies statewide, the consequences of a tenant here in San Francisco is that if you get a notice that you have to vacate, and let's say you get as much as $8,000, that's not going to do you a heck of a lot of good considering what you are faced with if you want to stay in San Francisco as a renter because of the high rents. Is that right?
That's absolutely true. But you also have to look at it from the other point of view. The rent ordinance has made life unbearable in many circumstances for landlords in San Francisco.
Okay.
Well, there's a provision in the rent ordinance that says the landlord has to get a fair return. Mm-hmm. So it's not a regulatory taking.
Let me break you both for just a moment. I want to just take a very brief break. All right, it's our Call a Lawyer night. I want to see these attorneys with the phones to their ears. This is your opportunity in a number of areas. Workers' comp, criminal law, family law, legal malpractice law, landlord-tenant. We have two attorneys here. I'll let you know who they are a little bit later. Two attorneys here for landlord-tenant. We have an attorney for employment law. tax law, real estate, bankruptcy law here tonight, and then tomorrow, actually, Leon Baer will be available, and I'll give you his 800 number if you'd like to call him tomorrow. So that number for our Call a Lawyer, which we do every month, is 1-800-525-9917, 1-800-525-9917. And if you'd like to talk with my guests on the air, as soon as you call, I hope we'll get to you very quickly, 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing landlord-tenant law. And if you've tuned in just a couple of minutes late, I want to tell you who's here with me. Mark Seidenfeld and James Coy Driscoll, they're both very knowledgeable, very, very competent, very good, tremendous guests on this program, have been for years, as a matter of fact, in the area of landlord-tenant law. So if you do have a question or comment and you're listening to us live, please join us. And we have... Do we have someone waiting to... No, we don't have anybody yet. Okay. So if you have a question or a comment, please call in and tell us what your problem is, whether you're a landlord or a tenant, and hopefully my guests will give you some direction. There was something that you were talking about before we went on the air, that something about the in-law ordinance. And that's a San Francisco ordinance. What is that?
There's two ordinances that have been in front of the board recently. One is a conversion ordinance that that basically restricts the how a residential units can be converted, like taking two medium-sized units and making a McMansion apartment.
Ooh.
And the other one is an attempt to legalize, if you will, what are otherwise illegal units. And I think that both of these are intended to be pro-tenant. The first one is to take away the incentive of landlords to be able to, convert moderate-size apartments to super apartments so they can get even more money for them. The in-law one is to prevent what landlords often do in San Francisco, which is, let's say they have a legal garage unit they've been renting out to a tenant for 15 years. They decide they want more money from it, so they give the landlord gives the tenant notice that the tenant has to leave because they're going to demolish the unit, and the tenant packs up and goes, and maybe the unit gets demolished. Maybe it doesn't.
Uh-huh. And what's the consequence there?
Well, the consequence there is that you're reducing affordable housing by those tenants not being able to live there anymore. So this ordinance is attempting to legalize some of those units so that the landlords would no longer have the excuse to throw those people in the
street. I gotcha. Okay. And Mark, please.
I think a more common situation is when the tenant in such a unit, which is illegal, complains about something in the unit.
And the landlord kicks him or her out.
Well, no. Oftentimes they go to the housing department, the building inspector, and the building inspector comes out and says, this is an illegal unit, and cites the landlord, and the landlord is compelled by law to remove it.
Yes.
So the ordinance that Coy is talking about is seeking to somehow authorize units, and there are thousands of these units in San Francisco.
Tens of thousands.
The problem is not only are they usually built without permits, but they don't comply with health and safety laws. Mm-hmm. Many of them have no kitchens. Many of them have no heat. There are all sorts of problems with these units. Some of them have no windows, and they violate fire safety laws, sorts of things. So whether it's a great idea to legalize these or not is an open question in my mind.
I think it's a very big risky situation.
I just was looking at the ordinance online before we went on the air, but of course state law is still going to require that the city comply with the fire codes, state fire codes, state building codes, state housing codes.
Mm-hmm,
so I don't think that's going to be a problem, and I think it's going to be more on a unit-by-unit basis.
Well, I hope you're right.
I agree. It will be a unit-by-unit basis, but I think it is going to be a big problem because all the ones I've seen do not comply with those codes.
Yeah. Let's take a call. Sheila, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I am a landlord. I moved here in 03, and so I've owned this rental property since then. I just wanted to clarify, first of all, what your esteemed lawyers were talking about, and also you mentioned that, let's say someone lived in a building 15 years and they're being kicked out. I'm going to use that phrase.
Yes.
Well, you haven't even thought about rent control, how much that person was paying over 15 years is very small. I have a tenant who's lived here since 74. Mm. She's in her 80s. She is paying $225 a month for her apartment.
Wow.
I'm just saying that.
Wow.
Then I also want to clarify for your listeners the Ellis Act, because you don't just say, okay, you're leaving, I'm paying you $5,000. I believe with the Ellis Act, the building then has to be vacant for 5 years. So the landlord is also sacrificing something. He's not or she getting any rent for the 5 years. I don't know what it means if you sell it to someone else, if they can immediately start renting it. I sort of doubt that. Also, I've heard, and I don't know if this is true, that with the Ellis Act, let's say you have your tenants leave. 5 years later, they are allowed to come back to their apartment at the rent they were paying before. That your lawyers can
clarify
or not.
How about throwing a few questions at them, Sheila? let me get you to stop, because I think you would have questions for the rest of the program.
I have a very important question.
Quickly, if you would.
Okay. My daughter moved here. She's paying $3,000 a month for an apartment that was advertised with a wood-burning fireplace. She moved in. There is no damper or any top to the fireplace.
Yeah.
And so cold air, especially this time of year, is just going down into the apartment. She has to pay more rent, but it's freezing. And bugs can get in, birds, everything. But the landlord said she has no responsibility. If my daughter wants to close up the fireplace at her expense, my daughter's expense, fine. But otherwise, she's not going to do anything about it.
Let me get some comments for you, Sheila. Turn your radio back up, will you?
Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks for calling. Now, Mark, go.
On the issue of the fireplace, Sheila, the landlord is incorrect. That was rented with the fireplace. It's expected to be in working condition.
Yeah, of course.
It goes to the issue of habitability. And if cold air is coming in, I mean, what Sheila's remedy is to write to the landlord. You know, you want to have a written record saying it's broken, you need to fix it. And if the landlord doesn't, is to have the landlord cited by the Department of Building Inspection.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.
And I would agree with Mark, and I would add that make sure there's a paper trail, such as sending the letter certified mail, return receipt requested.
Yes.
Or the greatest thing for creating a paper trail ever, email.
Yeah. Or both.
Or both.
Yeah, or both. Get a lot. Now, what about her comments about the 5 years vacant? What comments do both of you have about that?
It's true that the building cannot be rented out for residential purposes for the next 5 years, of whether it's sold or not.
Really?
So
if the landlord gives a notice to the tenants, I'm going to sell this building. I want you out under the Ellis Act. I'm entitled to do that. And sells it to someone else, that someone else cannot rent any of those units for 5 years. Is that right?
That's
right.
Yeah.
Wow.
And,
yeah.
The caller made a point about her elderly tenant who was paying a
$200
rent.
Yeah.
But I'm sure when the caller bought the building, if she did her due diligence, she knew that the person was there, and that must have affected the purchase price.
You would think so. You would think so. I bet Sheila would call back and tell us.
I just want to add,
she may have a good lawsuit against a real estate broker. Who knows? Go ahead.
I just want to add that just because it can't be rented out after an Ellis Act eviction doesn't mean it can't be used.
Mm-hmm.
Landlords put their children in there.
Yeah.
They'll put their elderly parents in there. They'll put an office in there.
Yeah.
But it can't be rented out for residential use.
Okay. All right. Well, very good. A very good response, but also under the rent ordinance, Sheila made a point that this elderly lady, the 80-year-old lady who's been living there since 1974, which is, what is it, nearly 30-some-odd years.
Nearly
40 years. She is saying that, I'm not sure she's saying that the elderly lady is still paying $200, but under the rent ordinance, there is a provision where a landlord can charge a certain percentage additionally each year, isn't there? Or is there, am I wrong?
No, that's true. But for next year, they just announced the latest. It's going to be 1% increase.
1%. Well, that doesn't do us much good, actually, if it's only 1%. All right. It's our Call a Lawyer night. How busy, Martin, are the lawyers in there? I don't want them playing games. Only three lines are being used? No. Oh, three are available. Okay. Here's where you go. If you would like to take advantage of our Call a Lawyer night, which we do every month as a public service to you, these are attorneys who are very gracious with their time, and most of them who are here tonight have done this now for several years. So if you have a question for Off the Air, we have a number of topics that are available for you. I don't want to go through all of them right now, but it's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. No obligation on your part whatsoever. If you have a question for my guests on the air, that's 1-415-841-4134. 1-415-841-4134. This is Your Legal Rights. This is our regular landlord-tenant program. I'm Chuck Finney. My guests are James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld, landlord-tenant attorneys. Very experienced, very helpful for those of you who may have a problem, whether you're a landlord or a tenant. So I hope if you're listening to us live, whether you're in the Bay Area or if you're listening to us on the Internet at www.klw.org, I hope that you will call us and ask your question, make your comment, etc. By the way, I want to mention to you that and I want to certainly wish you all a very happy holiday season. We will be, our next program will actually be on January 1st. So on New Year's Day, we will be doing a program. We're not going to do one on Christmas. And I'm very interested in having you here, my guest, whose name is Rebecca Katz. She has written a number of books. She's a master chef. She has a master's degree in nutrition. Her focus in her latest book, which is called The Longevity Kitchen, is food as medicine to help people in various areas. And frankly, I'm very impressed with the book, and I wanted to share it with you. And occasionally, when I see something like this, although it's not strictly a legal issue by any means, I think there are things about our health that, frankly, are just as important as probably most legal issues, and I want to share them with you. So that's what we're doing on January 1st. Rose, welcome to the program.
Hello. Now, I just have a comment now about the five-year thing and the Ellis Act thing. Well, the whole point of the Ellis Act, of course, is that supposedly a landlord wants to take the building off the rental market. So, therefore, obviously, the landlord, it has to be off the rental market for at least, and I think that's a fairly short time. But the other thing is that, of course, he can't rent the units, but he can sell them as TICs or as condos if he can get condo permits.
Well, yeah, that's what my guests had said.
And that's the whole point of their doing it. That's how they make money.
Sure.
So it's not like these poor guys are sitting there like with an empty building that's not getting them any money.
So we don't need to use the Kleenex to wipe our eyes. Is that right? Is that right, Mark?
No, huh? I very strongly disagree, and it gets to the
Wow. Oh, wait a minute. Bring back the Kleenex, please. Come on.
It gets to the philosophical issue, Rose, of rent control. There are many landlords in San Francisco that are small landlords. They own two units, three units. They bought a building back in the 60s. They live in one, and they're going to retire on the rents from the other two. And all of a sudden, it's subjected to rent control. They can't make their mortgage. Their whole rent control system is out of whack. It assumes that private landlords have an obligation to provide housing below cost to other people, and it's really outrageous.
Okay.
I'm not going to get into an argument about that because I feel like anybody who wants to own their home should be able to own their home, and I feel like my apartment is my home, even though it's my landlord's property.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing is that most landlords, especially like, now my landlord is like that. They're an elderly Asian couple and they've owned this building for who knows how long. And it's giving them very comfortable retirement income, which is fine. But even with people like me who have lived here 25 years, and there's a gentleman who's lived here even longer, and the other tenants are pretty long-term, they're still making good money from this building because the building is probably paid off by now. The mortgage is probably paid off. And, you know, so it's not like these people aren't making any money.
So we shouldn't feel sorry for them, huh, Rose?
No, not really.
No, okay.
And that's fine if they, you know, right. if they just want to buy a few small properties so they'll have a comfortable retirement, that's great. But,
well, very
you know,
good.
And I don't consider them speculators or evil or anything like that. That's fine. But it's not like, you know.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Not out there in the shopping cart.
Thank you
and
very much.
The other thing is that, I just wanted to point out that there's this scam where someone will buy a building and tell the tenants that, oh, I'm going to Ellis the building, so I'll give you a couple $1,000 if you move out. And if I Ellis it, then you'll get evicted anyway. And people don't seem to know that they have a right to collect money if the building is actually Ellis'd. And, I mean, if he can get all the tenants out that way without actually Ellis'ing the building, then he can re-rent the apartment.
Well, that's a violation of the law, certainly, and he could be sued. Let me get some comments on that for you, Rose. Turn your radio back up. Thank you very much for calling.
You know, there's a lot of unscrupulous people out there, landlords, and yes, even two or three tenants. But
Rose. Not like Rose.
Yeah. The previous caller was suggesting is true.
Well, let me put the question to you. If
yes.
a landlord did what we're talking about here, who told the tenant, I want to sell this building, I want you out, and that's just a ruse. What the landlord wants to do is get rid of a tenant who's been there a long time, Rose, who's there for 25 years or whatever it is, get somebody new in there, charge them the market rate. Now, is that, what's the sanction there?
It depends. If he says you have to leave, then it's illegal eviction.
Well, yeah, but what's the sanction?
I'd like to give you $2,000 to leave, and because I'm going to Ellis the building if that doesn't happen, then that's a buyout.
So what are we talking about? What's the sanction? What's the particular?
There is no sanction for that.
A buyout is legal.
A buyout is legal.
But telling someone they have to move because otherwise I'm going to Ellis it, that's not legal.
What the main trouble, Chuck, is that a lot of people just simply do what they're told. Somebody tells them they got to jump, they jump. They don't go and talk to a lawyer. They don't go to the tenants unit. They just say, oh, the man said I had to do this, so they do it. And they get hurt, and they wonder why.
All right. We have come to the end of the statewide version of the program. For those of you who are with us live in the Bay Area, live on the Internet at www.kalw.org, we will continue and take your questions and comments. It is right now about 7:29 at 91.7, your local public radio station, KALW in San Francisco. This is Your Legal Rights. I'm Chuck Finney. We're doing our regular landlord-tenant laws and issues program, which we try to do about on the average every 6 weeks or so, because it is actually, I think, the major legal area that listeners seem to really relate to, certainly in the Bay Area anyway. My guests are Mark Seidenfeld, a real estate attorney who represents landlords and tenants with his offices in South San Francisco. My other guest is James Coy Driscoll, an attorney who represents tenants only. His offices are in San Francisco. And for those of you who are with us live, we also have our regular Call a Lawyer night. We are doing this tonight because the fourth Wednesday of the month, as you know, is Christmas, and we're not doing a program on Christmas, let alone Call a Lawyer night. So if you'd like to talk to any one of the following lawyers off the air at 1-800-525-9917, that's 1-800-525-9917, you can. They'll be here for another half hour. No obligation on your part. This is a great public service these attorneys are performing. Several of them have been doing this now for years. Let me let you know who they are in their fields of law. workers' compensation law, Alice O'Sullivan, certified specialist in that area, former chair of the Board of Legal Specialization of the State Bar. Jeff Hayden, certified specialist in criminal law. Janet Lee Frankel, certified specialist in family law. Peter Fortune, certified specialist in legal malpractice law. Nathaniel Bigger, landlord-tenant law. Daniel Wayne, landlord-tenant law. Sam Wu for employment law. Frank Adam for tax law, real estate. And her first time with us is Melissa Polk here for bankruptcy law during the program. I don't know that we've had anybody other than the guest on the program for bankruptcy here for Call a Lawyer. So give her a call also. I think Ron Rohde is here for patent law, aviation law, lemon law. That number again, 1-800-525-9917. And if you prefer, you can call tomorrow morning to speak with Leon Baer, a certified specialist in bankruptcy law. Leon has been doing this for several years, very gracious with his time, usually on the Thursday following our Call a Lawyer evening. So tomorrow, December 19th, between 8 a.m. and noon, he'll take your calls at 1-800-477-3111. 1-800-477-3111. If you call and the line is busy but we'll take your message, please leave your name and phone number for Mr. Baer and tell him you're a KALW listener and he'll call you back. So, all right, we've got Denise. Welcome to Your Legal Rights. Denise, are you there? Denise, you're awfully quiet tonight. What's happened? All right. I don't know what happened to Denise. How about Matt? Are you there, Matt?
I'm here, yes.
Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi. I've been renting a home, a single-family home in El Cerrito for the past 16 years. And recently, about 2 months ago, my landlord said she wanted to sell the house, and she followed up with a letter giving me the 60 legal days notice that she wanted me out by February 1st. The circumstances surrounding it are a little bit complicated. She's timing the market, wanting to sell. She's an older woman. We've had a good relationship the last 16 years. But what prompted it, what she said was the straw that broke the camel's back, was that there was a once every 5-year building inspection where the city of El Cerrito sent a building inspector. And there are a couple issues. Inoperable windows was a big one, and she's going to have to replace windows. And she said she didn't want to deal with that, and she's going to sell the place as is. Mm. I've indicated to her that I'd like to buy the place, and she seemed receptive, but she hasn't responded in any way. And it's been over a week now since the last time I presented my case for selling to me.
What's your question?
So my question is, what sorts of do I have any legal rights as far as the circumstances that, you know, that she did indicate that she's looking to sell the property because
you mean you as a tenant? Do you have any right of first refusal? Is that what you're saying?
Is there a way I can say I'm not leaving on February 1st?
Yeah. Okay. Let me get some comments for you. You know, I think. What's very important, you live in what community?
This is El Cerrito.
What county is that?
It's in El Cerrito, Contra Costa
County. Contra Costa County. I'll tell you, I think it's very important with something of this significance that you take the time to, at the very least, call the Contra Costa Bar Association, County Bar Association, Lawyer Referral Service, and try to get an appointment with a landlord-tenant attorney who represents, let's say, tenants or landlords, and have at least a half an hour consultation. It'll probably cost you only $35. But I think this is important enough that you should take the time to do this and see what your options may be. But what I will do is ask my guests if they will comment for you. As essentially, are you under a written lease or agreement at this point, or is it basically month to month?
We were doing 1-year leases that ran out in October, and it went month to month at that point.
So you are at month to month right now. Okay.
That's correct.
Let me get some comments, starting with Mark, because Mark represents a lot of landlords. What comments do you have?
I would say if he's on a month-to-month tenancy, the landlord was correct to give him a 60-day notice because he's been there for more than a year.
Yeah.
And she doesn't need to state a reason for an eviction because it's not a rent-controlled jurisdiction. And I'm not sure what else there is to say.
Unfortunately, I have to agree with Mark. As I've said before on this program, if you live, if you're a tenant and you live in a jurisdiction without rent control, you're basically a serf.
Yeah.
When they say go, you go.
Okay, that's what I had thought. I wasn't sure there might be some recourse. I thought I'd call in anyway.
What you might, you know, though, Matt, what you might want to do also, does she have any idea what she thinks her single-family residence home is worth?
Well, it's been a crazy market, and it continued into the fall here with a lot of, you know, low-ball prices, asking prices, with the expectation of them going well over, like, you know, six figures over asking, with a, you know, bidding wars.
Does she know, though, what she wants to price it at?
Well, I don't know. So she has a realtor, and I thought that they were probably looking into that. And so hopefully we can still work something out, you know, where she can avoid some hassles and sell to me at value she'll think is market value and that I feel like is reasonable. And so I don't have to lose my home with my children.
Well, that would be a shame. That would be a shame. You can afford to go ahead and make an offer and get a mortgage with a bank?
Yeah, I just laugh because, you know, California real estate, sure, I can afford it.
Well, no, now with all the problems of California real estate, not everybody can afford it.
Oh, I know. I'm Joe. It's quite a stretch, but it's...
But you think you can do it. Mark has another comment for you.
Matt, I would suggest you contact a local realtor yourself and ask to be notified when the place hits the multiple listing.
Yeah.
The landlord may be leery about dealing with you direct. That may be why she's not telling you, you know, exactly what she's doing. But once it hits the multiple listing, you can certainly approach her through the through a realtor.
Yeah. Good luck to you, Matt.
Thanks a lot. Appreciate it.
Take care. Hope it works out for you. All right. By the our number again, 1-415-841-4134 on the air. 1-415-841-4134. I see one of the attorneys for Call a Lawyer not doing anything other than drinking from a can of whatever. I'm not sure what it is. And that's what I don't want to have. I want to have attorneys talking with you off the air. So that's 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917 for our Call a Lawyer night. And support for KLW is provided by the Bar Association of San Francisco, which has been supporting this program for many years, and also with respect to Call a Lawyer, always providing the landlord-tenant attorneys, the employment law attorney, and in this case, additionally, Melissa Polk for bankruptcy. And so this is a wonderful project that Your Legal Rights has gotten involved with the Bar Association of San Francisco for. And so if you have a legal problem, you may need to talk to a lawyer. I'm getting all choked up over this. You can tell this, can't you?
It's a very emotional
subject. Yeah, it's very emotional. Very emotional. The San Francisco Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Service can arrange an appointment for you to meet with an attorney experienced in the area of law related to your situation. This, for a referral to a lawyer, you can call 415-989-1616. That's 415-989-1616. If you're in San Mateo County, the San Mateo County Bar Association also has a lawyer referral service. You can call your own, of course, during normal business hours, 650-369-4149, 650-369-4149. If you are Martin, who helps me on the program, and I don't know what's going wrong with my voice here. He's just brought me three different throat coat lozenges. I don't think I'm going to have any more than I still have one in my mouth. So please, everybody, excuse my the frog in my throat. I don't know what's wrong. If you are in any other county, every county has a bar association and a lawyer referral service. You can call your own during normal business hours. Tell them what the problem is. They'll do their best to find someone who's experienced in the area and set you up with a half-hour consultation. Most counties throughout California, the Bar Association's Lawyer Referral Services will charge anywhere from $25 to $35 for the half an hour. And it does not go to the lawyer. It goes to the Bar Association to support the event of your being able to do this. It's a fine Lawyer referral is a fine thing that these bar associations have. So I hope you take advantage of it. I hope you don't need to, but it's there for you. All right, we've got Marvin. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Yes, hello. Good evening.
Hi.
I have a comment. I have issue with the lady by the name of Rose, who said she had a landlord, an Asian couple, whatever landlord.
You're not the landlord, are you, Marvin?
No, I am not.
Okay, all right. I wanted to make sure we weren't going to have a fight on the program. Go ahead. No. I'm just joking.
She said that she thought the landlords were making enough and the rent that she was paying was enough and everything. And I wanted to say, has she ever put herself in the place of the landlords, these people who bought the building, paid the mortgage for 30 years? Why should they not get the maximum rent that they should for the, you know, prevailing prices that are in a city that they are renting?
Yeah.
If a person cannot afford to pay a rent in San Francisco, which happens to be one of the most overpriced, places in the entire nation, well, maybe they should move to a place that rents are lower. Why should the landlords, be taking in less than what they can? Why should they be taking less than the prevailing prices? Why? Is it that the tenants always think they're right and the landlords are always wrong just because they have more money?
Well, let me get some comments for you, and I bet we're going to get Rose calling back to get back at you, Marvin, but thank you very much for calling. Coy, did you have some comment in response to Marvin?
I understand the pure capitalism idea of what he's saying, but in reality, we cannot do whatever we want with our property. If you have a residential house, you cannot start doing a manufacturing plant there. As I said earlier, I own a car, but that doesn't give me the right to drive it down the sidewalk. There are restrictions in our society as to how we can use our property, whether it's movable things, what lawyers call personal property like cars, or real estate. In San Francisco, one of those restrictions is that there's some limitations on when you can evict people and how much money you can charge them. Just being able to gouge anybody you can anytime is, I'm sorry, not the American dream.
Mm.
I have to respond to that,
too. Go ahead, please, Mark.
This is of a different order than where you can drive your car and when you can drive your car. There's a presumption behind these laws that somehow it is the responsibility of private individuals who somehow scrape together the money to buy a building to provide a service, housing, for other people who haven't done so, and to do it at a below market rate. It's a simply outrageous presumption. Tenants in San Francisco, many of them can afford to be owners. I've had cases myself, and I'm sure you have, Coy, also, where the tenants had more financial means than the landlord did. If it was means tested, if the rent laws were means tested, I could perhaps agree with part of it. But that's not the case. It simply shifts a burden which should be borne by the public, not by private landlords.
Okay. All right. Well, let me see. I guess people are quiet tonight. I don't know. Is there something going on that's taking people away from this program? I don't know.
I think there's some shopping for some event.
Oh, no.
I don't know.
Oh, no.
What could be more important than this?
Well, that's...
I don't know.
Yeah. All right. 1-415-841-4134 is the phone number for Your Legal Rights. If you are not shopping and you have a legal problem and you would like to talk with an attorney off the air, whether it's bankruptcy law, patent law, lemon law, BBB arbitration, bankruptcy law, tax law, real estate employment law, landlord-tenant, legal malpractice, family law, or criminal law, or workers' compensation law. I have some very fine attorneys who are here who are very gracious with their time.
Don't go away.
And the number, Martin, I hear you on the air. 1-800-525-9917. 1-800-525-9917. Okay. You finally awakened. Those of you who are not shopping have finally decided, gee, is there something to do other than shopping? So you're listening to this program and you decide you're going to call in, and that's great. Okay. So we've got Bob. Welcome to Your Legal Rights, Bob.
Hi.
Hi. You're on the air.
I'm an owner of a rent-controlled building in San Francisco. I'm a small-time landlord. And my question is, there's sort of a large elephant in the room that we never talk about. All the new construction since June 13th, 1979 is not rent controlled. Why do we have that they're clamping down further and further on the more and more restrictive on landlords like myself. And many of those units, when they convert, they go Ellis Act, they convert to condos. There's a smaller and smaller pool that's being rent-controlled and a larger pool of non-rent-controlled. Why do they never talk about some blend in the law?
You'll be happy to know that they do talk about it, and there have been proposals to expand rent control to cover newer buildings. The original purpose, though, was to preserve the existing rental housing stock. So the compromise that enabled the legislation to pass was that new buildings, new construction, would not be covered by it. But I feel pretty certain that in the future that's going to change, and they will cover it.
So what's the year of your building, Bob?
I'm sorry, what was that again?
What is the year that your building was built?
1925.
So you are covered by rent control, of course.
Yeah, but it's unfortunate because the tenants that pay beastly low rents are going to be there. If they ever do clamp down on the new construction, the $900 tenant that pays for the same thing that somebody else is paying, $3,000 in a newer building, mm-hmm. boom, they'll be rent controlled, but they'll be locked in at really high rents. So it's still unfair, even if they make the newer properties.
Very good. That's a very good point. Let me get some comments for you there. Okay, Bob, thank you very much for calling.
Sure.
Yeah. What about this? If they, Mark, do in San Francisco or other places that have rent control, if they do then cover newer buildings by rent control, and let's say the newer buildings as the tenants are living there right now, let's say San Francisco, are paying maybe as much as $3,000 a month, that's locked in.
Well, I'm sorry, did you want Mark to respond?
No, go ahead, Coy. Yeah.
Okay, one of the problems is San Francisco would gladly change the effective date of that, but I believe there's a state law that says they can't.
I see.
So the legislature is out there trying to, encourage new construction and by doing so.
I see. So by encouraging new construction, they are not going ahead and amending the law so that rent control would be covering new construction. Is that your point?
Well, yes.
Okay.
You know, because the whole idea with having a certain fixed date is to not dissuade people from going forward with building.
Mm-hmm.
Now,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's been 30-some years, and it might be time, as the last caller suggested, to change that, but we got to get to the legislature and get them to change it first.
Yeah, very interesting. Any comments, Mark?
I was not aware of that state law, and it makes sense, though, what you're saying, Coy. But I know I have read things in the paper about proposals to mm-hmm. extend rent control to newer buildings.
Okay, let's take another call. Amy, welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Thank you.
Hi.
Quickly, I'll just make a comment. You know, I grew up renting as a kid. My parents could never afford to buy a house. I moved here in 98 during the dot-com boom. I could barely afford rent. I saved for years and finally invested in a TIC. So I feel pretty strongly about rent control from the standpoint of I'm fine with it, except, you know, I don't think $250 a month is reasonable. And if it was adjusted according to a market, at least somewhat, I think I would be in line with it. But
mm-hmm.
even as an owner, you know, I had to move out of my TIC for personal reasons. That's just my opinion, even as a landlord, and I align with the fact that not all landlords own property as a business or to make lots of money. It's just sometimes it's how the circumstances work out. But anyway, my question is around fair market value. So my co-tenants and I are thinking about selling the building, and when we put our TIC agreement in, one of them was opposed to the clause around first right of refusal to the other co-tenants based on the fact that, you know, what might be set as fair market value would actually be lower than what they could get from, you know, if there is, you know, a market that could support bidding wars. And so I wanted to get some advice on that of, you know, we'll likely have to get first right of approval, give first right of refusal to our renters if we try to sell. But how is that price set, and how is a as a landlord, can I get the most out of that if they do decide to
Well, let's get some comments, because this obviously, I think, is a matter, Amy, that you really need to meet with probably a real estate attorney to talk about this. But turn your radio back up, and let me get some comments for you. And please understand that your question is one that is a significant question and of great potential, financial potential. So you need to really kind of convince yourself that you need to invest some money in speaking with, in my opinion, speaking with a real estate attorney to really get some ideas of what you might do. Mark, what thoughts do you have for her?
Fair market value is really... it's what a willing and able buyer is willing to pay.
Yeah.
And that really is it. If there is a right of first refusal, you need to go out and see what people are willing to pay and then say, okay, I've got offers to buy it for this price. Do you want to equal that? And if so, it's yours. They have the right of first refusal. If not, then you're free to sell it to somebody else.
And the only thing I would add, and this is amplifying what you said, Chuck, is when you're dealing with something of this great value, trying to go it alone is kind of like doing your own surgery. You can do it, but it's not a brilliant idea. It sounds like the tenants have a right of first refusal. So, like I always tell landlords, get a landlord attorney. Now, of course, I only tell them on this program because that's the only time I talk to them.
Yeah. Any other comments? All right. Let's see. We have Emma. Welcome to Your Legal Rights.
Hi. I have a question and one comment.
Go ahead.
The first question would be, if you give a tenant an offer, a buyout, can the tenant decline the offer and stay?
Yes.
Oh, that's a good point.
It's just an offer. There's no legal compulsion there. The tenant is not compelled to accept any offer.
Okay. I mean, this is a rent control tenant as well. So yeah. I just wanted to clarify that. And then the comment that I have is that I've been doing scheduled inspections. This is new to me. I've only been doing this for about 2 years. And I have noticed... there's a lot of rent control tenants whose units are completely out of code. I mean, I've seen some crazy stuff before, but it's just out of hand. I've inspected apartments where the toilet was like non-functioning.
So Emma, if I may ask you, what is it? What is the focus on? What is the question?
Well, no, it's a comment, being that out of all the units that I've inspected, there's some that are not up to code, and the tenants are afraid to get things fixed because they feel like because they're in such a low-paying rent that they're not allowed or they should not ask for things to be fixed. So I just wanted to make a comment to
Emma, are you saying that these tenants are living in rent-controlled properties?
That is correct.
Okay. Well, let me get some comments for you. Thank you very much for calling. Certainly, people who are living in rent-controlled properties, if there's something not functioning properly, the principle, the statewide legal principle of habitability applies, and they are entitled under their arrangement, contract, or whatever it may be, with the landlord to have the landlord fix that at the landlord's expense. Isn't that true, Mark?
It does not matter whether it's rent-controlled or not rent-controlled.
Yeah.
A tenant has an absolute right to habitable premises.
Yeah.
And if the tenant is too intimidated to speak to the landlord, we have a building department, and they send inspectors out all the time. The complaints can be anonymous, and this retaliation is strictly forbidden by law.
Yeah, and if a landlord retaliates, that puts the landlord in the position that he or she could be sued for significant damages.
Absolutely.
And I think, gentlemen, what is not being said here is a lot of times when you have low-income people, you also perhaps don't have the level of sophistication that you would see in other groups.
Yes.
And they don't realize that they have the rights that were just enumerated. And there's just plain fear. And I certainly can understand that. And that's why... one of the best things people can do, whether they're a landlord, whether they're a tenant,
is learn what their rights are, especially before they do anything or agree to anything.
You know, one of the things that I would highly recommend, and I want you to know that NOLO, N-O-L-O, Press, is not a sponsor, not a funder of this program. I have worked with these people. By that, I mean their authors have been guests on this program. I've been doing this program for nearly 30 years. They've been guests on this program. I'm a great believer in the NOLO large paperback books. And there is a very good book on landlord-tenant law. California Tenants' Rights is the actual title of the book for tenants, California Tenants' Rights. I really believe that it would be helpful to you if you picked it up at a bookstore, or you go to the consumer section of your local public library and take a look at it. It will be there. At least that's what I've found. And that way you can educate yourself and start asking or start learning what questions to ask and what rights do you have. And I realize many people, unfortunately, do not have, unfortunately, a good grasp of the English language, and I don't think the NOLO books are translated, which is unfortunate, but go ahead, Mark. Yeah.
Another good resource for tenants is the San Francisco Rent Board.
Yes.
Because they can help people in various other languages besides English.
And I would add that there's other groups out there, such as the Housing Rights Committee in San Francisco, the San Francisco Tenants Union, because, Chuck, I do agree with you that I'm a big NOLO fan. I'm looking at my bookcase. I have a few of their books myself. Those books do address the statewide issues. However, as Mark said, the rent board or other San Francisco specific resources will give San Francisco tenants a spin on the overlay that San Francisco puts on those state laws.
And certainly lawyer referral, and in particular, certainly San Francisco as well as San Mateo County, if you are not really fluent in English, certainly the San Francisco Lawyer Referral Service, the San Mateo County Lawyer Referral Service, and I'm sure most of the lawyer referral services throughout the state will find you a bilingual attorney who can help you to understand this. For an initial half an hour consultation, it may cost you $25 or $35. It's a wonderful investment. Well, unfortunately, we've just about run out of time. I want to give you, because the lawyers are still here, they haven't run yet, 1-800-525-9917 for Call a Lawyer. That's 1-800-525-9917. I want you to realize we will be back with you on January 1st, a live program on New Year's Day. I wish you all a very happy holiday season. And I want to thank you very much for joining us again, both of you, for joining us. You've been very gracious with your time over the years. James Coy Driscoll and Mark Seidenfeld, I wish you joyous holidays.
Thank you, Chuck. The same to
you. And a great 2014.
I hope so.
I hope it's good. For both of you and for everybody else out there, your legal rights production staff members, our program engineer on this segment of the program, Debbie Kennedy. Debbie, lovely to have you here. My production assistant, Martin McLean, who's great on the throat lozenges that I needed tonight, unfortunately. Funding for your legal rights is made possible by the Lawyer Referral Service of the Bar Association of San Francisco, the Trusts and Estates section of the State Bar, the Labor and Employment Law section of the State Bar, the California Applicants Attorneys Association, and the San Mateo County Bar Association. And on January 1st, we're going to talk about food as medicine. We're going to talk about foods that may help you to be healthier and extend your life. My guest will be a master's in nutrition, who actually I think you'll be very impressed with. I'm very impressed with her. She is the chef, and I want to let you know about this, chef with a master's degree in nutrition, the executive chef of the annual Food as Medicine training program sponsored by the Center for Mind-Body Medicine at Georgetown Medical School. She's the author of a new book, The Longevity Kitchen, and I wanted you to know about this. That's what we're going to start the new year with. Happy New Year, everybody. I'm Chuck Finney. We'll be right back.